Welcome, fellow Lushes. Come on in, pull up a bar stool, and enjoy some cocktails with Dimples and the Beard.
It's Dick Day.
It's definitely Double Dick Day. Wait.
Dick Day.
It's just plain old Dick Day.
My headphones don't work. Big thanks to Donna Lee, whose episode will be, well, it's already out. Never mind. Donna Lee's episode is already out. Not only did she send us the shirt, she sent my wife a shirt that says, nope. So I'm not getting any dick today. Or wait. Yeah.
Nope.
You know what I meant. She sent us these fancy.
That you could put on your bedroom door.
Yeah.
Or wherever you want. You could hang. Gentlemen, I guess you can hang this anywhere you want.
Right. Out on the stalls at the truck stop.
I guess it was your wiener.
Yeah.
And then they just pull out the nope.
She also.
So thank you. Thank you.
She also sent us a very nice thank you card that brought a little tear to my eye.
Aw.
She was very kind. I forgot to bring it. Or no, I didn't. It's in the bag. I will let you read it when we're done here.
Very sweet. So,
but also.
In addition to funny.
A big thank you to our friends over here at Lion's Tail. This is our local brewery right around the corner from where we record this studio. And they were nice enough to give us some beer to drink on this thing. So
good beer
tonight. I'm drinking.
Look at that. You got your favorite.
Drinking a Lion's Tail Hefeweizen. It's a good fucking beer. I already know that because I've had it before.
Had it there. Yep.
But I will still give you the taste test.
Oh, there it goes. We'll see how you like it. Now, Hefeweizen's not my favorite.
Oh, that's a good beer.
But. We'll give it a whirl. Not my favorite beer out of all, but you know what? We'll see what they bring to the table.
What are you doing?
I'm tasting the beer.
You're drinking out of... I'm not real thrilled about that. Could have done that a different way. For the next one, maybe get a little glass. We'll pour a little into a little glass. Jesus. All right.
We did that without even opening the tavern.
All right.
Well, that's not right. That is very delicious.
We also did that without welcome back to another episode of Cocktails with Dimples and the Beard. Returning guest, author, Jarrett Keene will be on very shortly.
Very shortly.
To talk
excited.
About Gateways to Annihilation. Wait.
His new book coming out. It is out. His new book is out.
Gateways to Annihilation. I keep wanting to say Gateway to Annihilate, but it's Gateways
to Annihilation.
To Annihilation.
Stories.
Sounds like a heavy metal album.
Well, there is a lot of heavy metal, and he's very heavy metal forward, and he's a rocker, so he's got he influences that his stories with it.
Excellent.
It was fun. It was fun. We will get talk to him. Can't wait. Second time, like you said, and when you want to go to go backwards and go watch the first time we had talked to him. I don't remember what episode that is, but when you go to follow and leave a comment, you can search for that episode. It was a fun one when his last book, Hammer of the Gods. And then reach out to us on Instagram, Facebook, X.
Shithole.
Leave a comment.
Call me by surprise.
And all that good stuff. We should not keep a handsome man waiting.
All right. So without further ado, Jarrett Keene. All right. So welcome back, Jarrett Keene. You sent us an advanced copy of your latest book, Gateways to Annihilation, and 14 short, crazy, wild, absurd,
demented.
Lots of words to describe these 14 stories. So,
and none of them are similar. Well, they're similar aspects because it comes from your mind, which is fun. Right. But
so, thank you for coming back to talk about it. These are fun stories, and if you're a horror fan or the supernatural fan, or you're gonna love these stories. They are a lot of fun. So there's some humor to them and some excitement. So,
well, I'm just thrilled to be back. You know, I've been keeping tabs on your podcast. It's been what, almost 2 years?
Is that how long it's been? Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy. We see you pop up.
Yeah, I'm impressed by the increasing professionalism. You know, you guys got cool sponsors now.
We're working on it. We're working on it. Yeah, we actually, look at that. We have one of our first local beer sponsors tonight. Good old Lion's Tail here in Neenah, Wisconsin has provided us beer for this episode. So things couldn't be better.
Oh man, it just looks great. The guests are varied and interesting. And I didn't think you'd invite me back. Their guests are so great, but here I am, and I'm thrilled to be here. Talk to you about
horror. Your books are so great. Honestly, we should have had you back a year ago, and we could have talked about the Westerns, but we never got around to it. But we'll definitely talk about those a little bit, too, because those are very good, too.
Yeah, the Western, I'm afraid to say, is it's not a big-selling genre.
Sure. And
my publisher suggested I move in a more horror direction. I've been writing horror stories for years, and I said, yeah. Hey, I've got enough to put together in a collection. And they said, that's great. Let's check it out. And so they were thrilled. I'm thrilled to have these stories out finally in a book together.
Yeah.
They've each appeared previously in like anthologies, literary magazines, things like that.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Did you write any new ones for the book, or are they all? Okay.
No. Each of the 14 were, you know, but a lot of these things are hard to track down.
Yeah,
some of these anthologies are pretty obscure.
Sure.
Literary magazines. I don't know if you know anything about literary journals published by universities, but they're very, you know, we're talking about a print run of a couple hundred, maybe 300 tops.
We look like guys who would know all about literary journals published by universities, I think.
Absolutely.
We're both wearing shirts that say Dick Day on them. I'm sure. Yeah, we look very. Well, that's why.
That's why I love hanging out with you guys. We're you and I are mining that middle brow demographic.
Yeah, we bring your high intellect to our intellectual level.
We meet in the middle.
we're dumbing it down.
We're hitting all we're hitting everybody out there. So for you. Now, with all these 14 stories out there, when you go into it, do you know if it's going to be a short story before you start, or do you just run out of stuff and say, now it's a short story?
Just run out of stuff. See, we do ask the high intellectual questions.
The hard-hitting journalism.
No, what I do is, I've been doing this since the year 2000. Since the,
sure.
You know, the internet's infancy. I've been going online and looking for calls for stories for weird anthologies. You know,
okay.
I wrote a story for a Celtic horror anthology.
Hmm.
That's the story that you find in the book called Glandomirum, which is about the Celtic gods and their capacity for murder and mayhem.
Yeah.
They're hiding in plain sight in the Irish pubs of Las Vegas.
So you are dead.
I'm dead.
Yeah. He likes the Irish pubs, so.
I do, and I looked that word up, and it's not in the English dictionary.
Right. It's a location. It's a realm, if you will, in Celtic mythology. And so I thought it'd be fun to find the most obscure, you know, Celtic name for a bar, a secret realm.
We do kind of need like a glossary for Jarrett Keane made up words, because that was my problem as I'm reading it. I'm like, I know I'm not pronouncing this how he wants it pronounced, but.
No, I mean, a lot of these terms I don't know how to pronounce because it's all through research. You know, I do a lot of digging through the stacks of the libraries to find, for example, utterly brutal and failed yellow fever epidemic cures. find in the opening story, Conjure Me.
Yeah.
During that horrible moment in New Orleans history where people are turning to voodoo to combat this wicked fever, and it's not working, and people are going to desperate measures, and people are allowing their baser desires to run free, as with Josephine and her adversary there, the talent, the homicidal doctor, who is gleefully waging war against the human bodies, particularly the enslaved, in an effort to kind of get his kicks.
Yeah.
And, all of this is research. Like I didn't really make anything up. They're all based on historical characters and moments.
Okay.
And so writing that story, for instance, the opening story, is like doing a dissertation. You know, I had a stack of literature on New Orleans pharmacology and voodoo and history, and the way the yellow fever epidemic just ravaged that city.
Yeah.
So that was there's also a great museum there in the French Quarter. I don't know if you're familiar with it, the New Orleans Pharmacy Museum, if you've ever strolled through there.
I've heard of that. Yes. Okay. I've heard of that.
A friend
and
of
you've
mine
been there?
Yeah, a friend of mine runs the museum there, and she's just a great resource for New Orleans history, particularly in regards to medicine.
Wow, that's that's awesome.
So what, I mean, something like that, what brought you into that direction? Because you know her and you knew the shop and you said, I'm going to try and expand on this. Cause that's something specific.
My wife was a student at Tulane University there in New Orleans.
Oh, okay.
So I used to visit her, drive up from Tallahassee, Florida, where I was studying and visit her and her friends and, you know, just enjoy the debauchery.
It is a good time.
Mardi Gras Halloween in New Orleans is just fantastic.
Tuesday in New Orleans is just fantastic. Tuesday.
Your average Tuesday.
Yes. Yeah, I've never been there for a big event. I've just been there normal days of the week, and it's amazing.
And, you know, the South is inherently Gothic, I believe. You know, it's just the history there is so dark and disturbing and really delicious. Like, it's as fun as a writer to kind of jump in there and create a scenario where the characters are all, like I said, trying to secure their most intense pleasures amidst all the mayhem and death.
You know? Yeah. So the answer to that question is no, he's not leaving stuff out. He is delicately painting a beautiful picture with a lot of information.
Oh, there's definitely a lot of information.
Well, you know, I'm trying to balance information with narrative
momentum.
You know, like, I want the story to move, and hopefully the stories do move, even though there's a lot of, you know, you might have questions like how do you pronounce this name? But to me, it's just part of the effect. You know, I'm trying to avalanche the reader with some details that they might consider coming back to, but it's like a roller coaster ride. You're not really sure where the turns are leading or where they've even been, because you're going, you know, it's all
right. I
just want the momentum to be so you know, intoxicating that you you're just kind of swept along by the story and the characters and what they want, their motivations.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of the fun thing about short stories is it does feel like, with a good short story, it does feel like you're getting on the roller coaster in the
right
middle
away.
Of the roller coaster. Like, you didn't get the beginning of the roller coaster. You're already on the top of the hill, just waiting to go down the hill. And here we go. Because you got to develop things quickly, right? You know, this thing isn't going to be 200 pages. You got 20 pages to work with. So,
and not only that, I really like the idea of a punk song or a 3 minute, you know,
right. Back to there you go.
Rock.
There you go.
To me, that's a lot of fun. And I want these stories to be punchy. You know, that they vary in length. Sometimes they go to 12, 15,000. Other times they're just 3,000.
Yeah.
But for me, an ideal story lands somewhere between 8 and 10,000 words. You know, it's just enough to kind of create a world, create a set of characters that you care about, and you. You know, their yearnings become familiar to you, and so that's what I set out to do with each of these. I mean, another story that was exquisitely researched but also experienced was The Ballad of the Skunk Ape.
Okay.
Oh, wait, experience.
you've smelled a skunk ape?
Well, saw the skunk ape.
Close encounter. No, I should say. An experience of Myakka State Park, you know, the preserve there, the environment, the locale, that was a lot of fun to write. But then also fall down the wormhole of skunk ape research and images and video, all of it's grainy.
so
it's out there. Yeah, I saw some.
People think skunk apes are a real thing?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's the Florida version of Bigfoot.
You know. Okay, yeah. All right.
So, I would imagine there's groups down there that research it go after them and look. So that'd be fun.
There's documentaries and everything.
Oh wow,
documentaries. Nice.
So the skunk ape to me was always something I wanted to write about. You know, cryptozoology of Florida to me is super interesting. So I wanted to kind of pay tribute to all that in a story with a character that was. Interesting and you know, that had some thorns, but also you wanted to kind of give her a hug. You know, Rawlings, the main character of story. She's difficult. She's got a lot of thorns, but there's she is a rose kind of stuck in the muck of Myakka State Park, the swamp.
So was that your first dabble of writing a song? And I'm assuming you wrote that song in that story?
I did. I wrote the music, too, and I should probably post that on Facebook.
Well, that was my next question. How deep did you get into that? Did you ever record it?
No, but I mean, I wrote the song on an acoustic guitar. It's like a little strummy campfire bar, you know, something I imagine a Jimmy Buffett cover band kind of playing for kicks and giggles after too many margaritas. Well, that's what I was after. And I think I succeeded. And obviously, yeah, you know,
it's a fun song.
If I had my druthers, you know, I would have sprung for financed those little vinyl records that used to come in magazines. Do you remember those little sheets?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Yes. Yep.
Rip them out.
Horrible. But yes, I did.
No, they sounded like crap, but they were intriguing as a child. As a teenager.
Oh, I loved them as a child. Thought it was the coolest thing. I'm getting a record in a magazine. Right. This is awesome.
Yeah. So I wish I had had some money to find. I would love to buy a book at Barnes & Noble that had one of those.
That would have been neat.
Needs, you know.
Yeah. Maybe the second edition.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm not giving up.
Okay. Good. First, you got to get it recorded.
Yes. Yes.
I'm curious, how old is the oldest story in here? Are the ones that are set in Florida, or were those written when you were living in Florida?
No, I wrote Ballad of the Skunk Ape here in Las Vegas.
Okay.
And honestly, it's easier to write about Florida when I'm not there. You know,
separate yourself a little from the madness
for me. Yeah. It's always the case. I don't know why, but it's hard. And with, the other stories, I mean, I think the earliest story there is like from 15 years ago.
Okay.
And that would be, the last story, which is the Son of Mogar. It's the story of a, Japanese, atom bomb survivor who immigrates to the States and finds work in Hollywood as a suit actor, mostly for B, C grade movies, Z grade movies, and finds himself, you know, like reenacting the trauma of that with these suits that he wears, and kind of unable to ever really heal. And all of it's narrated, of course, through the kid who is fatherless and looks to this guy, this suit actor Hirose, as a kind of father figure. And you know,
We were talking before that. It's like they're all over the place. You got a little of everything in there, which is makes it even more interesting to read through the short stories. You know, werewolves and one and Japanese, you know, bomb survivors. I mean, where do you through the years? Obviously, I get they weren't written at one time, but where did all this inspiration come from?
I mean, it's all behind me. Obsessive comics collecting. You know, weird books, as you know, anything from, you know, psychic warfare to the pyramids of Egypt,
right?
Bermuda Triangle, spontaneous human combustion, you know, there's an infinite number of subjects to write about. That's kind of been my big frustration with much of contemporary horror fiction. You know, I don't think it really takes enough leaps. You know, there's so many authors that they bring out a story collection and they sound like a Pearl Jam album. You know, every story is kind of like very similar to the one that precedes it. And I really wanted to bring out a collection of stories, or when I set out to write a story, I don't ever want to repeat myself with subject matter or setting or characters. You know, I want to put as many different things as I can into one story, simply because I don't know when I'll get another chance to tell one. And I don't know, you know, if I keep writing the same story, it's not going to dazzle anyone or bring them in.
Sure.
So there's not one character from any one of these 14 that you would like to carry on.
Oh, no, no. I mean, I have entire backstories. I could write novels about any of these main characters in the stories.
Yeah.
Okay.
Rawlings-Coburn, the pizza delivery boy, who's also a underground magician.
Right. Cold magician.
Of course.
Of course.
And Heaven, that brutal church burning pagan who's modeled after that the Lords of Black Metal, you know, that the saga of those Norwegian black metal bands.
Yeah.
I just tried to find the most despicable character I could summon in my imagination, you know, drawing a lot from that moment in 90s musical history.
Sure.
And then try to make him somehow redeemable, you know.
Not an easy task.
It wasn't, but.
But I think I almost pulled, I think I nearly pulled it off.
Yeah.
You did.
Yeah.
And that goes back to how descriptive you are and, you know, leading up to him making that change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because of what he saw. So, yeah, no, you accomplished that as well.
And so, you know, every story, I really enjoyed writing Tomb of the Spherians, you know, about those weird, what was that Pauly Shore movie where he's trapped in a biodome? I think it's called Biodome.
Yeah. You came to the right crowd for that answer.
Back to that raising the bar. That's us. Biodome.
When I saw that movie as a kid, I was like, this would be a lot better if it was played straight. Like it was like a, you know, an eerie dramatic horror thriller. And so for years I'd wanted to rewrite Biodome as a horror.
I like it. It works.
And I think I succeeded too, with that one to a degree. I mean, it's again, these are short little punchy tales. I think that one probably is around 5 or 7,000 words, but you know, also as I get older, my attention span gets shorter and my ability to write longer pieces, you know, I find myself being satisfied with, you know, 7, 8, 9,000 word pieces.
So, but speaking of Biodome, I mean, with Tombs of the Spherian.
Yes.
You kind of hit that where they have to live in for 2 years in a dome, kind of, right? That's
exactly what I was gunning for. And I really want to send it to Pauly Shore. I think he lives here in Las Vegas. So.
I think he has.
So I always wanted to say, hey, you inspired this horror story with your movie. And I don't know. I'm very nostalgic. You know, I remember those Stephen King story collections, novella collections that came out.
Right.
The Bachman books that he wrote under the pseudonym.
Yep.
That was so moving to me to read those stories as a 10, 12, 14 year old. And so I'm trying also to, I've said this before and last time I was here was, I want to capture some of that old magic that we seem to have forgotten a little bit about and try to replicate that feeling of picking up a book where you didn't know what was going to happen, you know?
A book that actually scares you. I miss books that actually scare me. I remember reading It when I was a teenager and not being able to sleep for nights, you know, and that doesn't happen anymore. They're too cookie cutter and too cliche. This one, I don't know if this one scares me to death, but there's so much to it that it's so freaky. You're definitely going to have some dreams about this book. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. And that too is, you know, I'm actually not going for shock or even, maybe fright. I'm, you know, a lot of it is dread and also imagination. Like I want to take your breath away with a lot of these stories. I want to dazzle with a kind of, not with research, but with the details of each story and where, you feel like you're there, like you can see it unfolding and you don't need a lot of, coaching or, what's the word? I'm not, over explaining or, I don't like all of that explanatory work, you know. I don't like a lot of people use the word world building, but I don't like to build the worlds. I like to suggest the worlds.
Okay.
With some haunting details, a haunting image that do more of the work than the author explaining to you why this is an important moment in the history of, for example, New Orleans or something. You know,
so. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you definitely have tons of detail in there. So do you find yourself first pass all the detail, or do you go back and say, now I need to add more detail?
For me, it's always all that detail comes in the first draft and then I pare it
down. Yeah.
I pare it away.
Oh, tear it down.
Yeah. I have to take stuff out because it's just, you know, like with Ghosts on the Moon, the werewolf story, I had done all this research on, you know, lunar architecture in you know, the Southwest. you know, it's fascinating, and I read it all and ingested it all. But no reader wants to really get into the, you know, the intricacies of lunar architecture by the ancient peoples of Southwest. It's too much. So, But that was a lot of fun to write, the idea of taking a kind of human resources detective and setting her loose. Right.
Put him in a
in a giant telescopic facility where everybody's slowly transforming into werewolves. I thought that would be a lot of fun.
That's kind of scary. That's definitely yes. scary.
Well, human resources, just a phrase alone, ices my blood. But
Well, speaking of human resources, when you put together a collection of stories like this, do you worry about somebody from a human resources coming and going, yeah, Isaac can't be in the book. That's a little too close to home. Like, wait, I don't think we can put that one in there.
You know, Isaac was probably the second story I wrote in this book, and I wrote that for an anthology called Dark Testament. It was horror retellings of biblical stories. I think it didn't have to be Old Testament. I think there are also New Testaments, but the Old Testament has all the best, darkest, twisted stuff.
Some of the scariest stories right there. Yeah, right.
And I wrote about Isaac, and I intentionally spelled it differently with a K at the end because I wanted to suggest that something was wrong or a bizarro retelling version, reimagining the story of Isaac. I mean, if you're a guy and your dad's still alive, you know, that's a story that haunts you, you know.
Yeah.
You think about it a lot when you're young. And so I thought about that story a lot, and I thought, what was really happening there? Like, because it doesn't make any sense on face. It's very sparsely detailed, narrated in the Bible. So I was like, I think I know what was happening. And so this was my way of imaginatively making sense of that story, even though my imagination throughout that story, Isaac, is very grim. And borderline, what's the word for it? I don't know. I would call it murderous. It's just a murderous tale.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, you hit that one on the head. That's for sure.
So you keep mentioning imagination. And in my head, I can only picture like tabs of acid and giant blunts as imagination when it comes to this book. Maybe you can't speak to that or just give us a wink if I might be right. I don't
No, but I mean, don't you love psychedelic fiction? I mean,
drugs? Yes. What? No, no. What?
Let the man talk. No. Like,
I don't think you need to do drugs to enjoy Mandy, the movie Mandy. It's such a, I probably talked about this movie last time, but it's such a mind twister.
And, yeah.
I feel like I've done drugs after watching a film.
Right. After seeing that movie, for
it
sure.
It really spun my head around. And you know, I've studied that film like as a storyteller might. And I love Jodorowsky. I love all those trippy cosmic sci-fi films.
Yeah.
And cosmic horror, I'm a huge fan of. But I don't necessarily think I need to, do shrooms to get there or to get in that headspace. I've had my mind blasted by so many books that it's almost like drugs. You know, I guess I use books like drugs.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah. There you go.
That's what opens your mind. And some people need the drugs to expand their mind, right? You've expanded your mind with lots and lots and lots of reading.
Yeah.
Research.
Lots of purient, lowbrow.
Yeah.
Conan the Barbarian, comics, violent, or role-playing games. And
yeah.
Well, I was happy to see that, in knowing your love for comic books, that you did get to write a story about comic book hell, which I was when I saw that title, I went, I slow down. You'll get to it. So yeah, that one was a lot of fun.
You can
really
read them out of order if you want.
I know, but I figured I would just continue to jump. Yeah. So that one, how fun was that one to write?
Well, comic book hell, I'm telling you, it's comic books are so interesting. They're such an interesting subculture. It's been flattened a bit by the internet.
And
cosplay has kind of made it even more goofy. But there was a real dark edge to comics collecting in the 80s, 90s. And I wanted to pay tribute to that ridiculousness with the comic scholar walking in there and you make the academic argument that this piece of trash comic was worth studying. Wow. And the obsessive collector there who runs a pizza shop. You know, he's there. He wants the comic as well. So, and then there's also that strange satanic church of the White Knives. They want the comic for their own collection to, you know, launch their new initiative to recruit. Yeah. Initiative. And, you know, they want to appeal to the young people by presenting
a comic book that's
inappropriate. Genius. And maybe cursed, maybe haunted. So I don't know. I wanted to put that all together, and it was so fun. And to me, that was like a little movie. It might be the best story in the book because it's got three different entities pursuing the same comic rare item, and just to see them collide. Oh, and then Veronica, the hooker.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, you're bringing a hooker. I don't want to do my dirty work. I'm going to get a hooker to do it.
And the love letters she gets from her Johns, I mean, just totally ridiculous.
But it is almost pretty and brilliant, you know. Let's get her to cozy up, and you know. So I mean,
that's right.
It's a good plan.
Use her feminine wares.
Wear them down.
And she's the only one who could suss it out and take care of these three different, you know. And I just had so much fun writing the bad guy in that one, Choke Bore.
Yeah.
And you know, I could write about Bentley Flood all day. I could write about these characters all day long. It's just to me, it's like a teaser for, say, like a filmmaker or producer. You know, if they read one of these tales accidentally, you know, they feel like a whole movie, like the potential for a whole cinematic experience there.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great point. You bring that up, but would you ever send it to Hollywood to some people to say?
I sent it. I mean, he hasn't responded, but I sent it to the Batman producer who I ran into at a Jack Kirby exhibit.
Ooh, nice.
In California last 2 months ago. So I sent it to him. I mean, I don't know if he'll read it, but I send it to people all the time. But
okay,
I'm sure you understand. It's like when you're like the Batman producer, that's kind of all that you do.
It is. Yeah. And they get so many. That's the other part of it, right? I mean, they get so many.
When I was there at the museum, I thought about it. I was like, oh, I've got the story on my phone. I could just, like, you know, text it to him or email it to him right now. And I was like, no, I've got his work email just when I get back to the office. Yeah, I'm just good at, like, you know, hey, you got to pay attention to me. You got to film my great idea. Because even as a low-level author, and if you haven't experienced this already, I'm sure you will. Especially if you went to that podcast convention, people will approach you and be like, I got this great idea for a novel. And if you write it, you know, we'll split the money. And writing your novel.
I have plenty of my own ideas. I'm good. Thanks.
But it's like, you know, I can imagine like a wannabe podcast bro coming up to you guys and being like, I've got this great idea for a podcast, you know,
or idea for a guest. You know, you should do this collaboration.
I mean, to be fair, if anybody has a great idea for a guest, reach out.
Just a side note.
We'll take it.
I think it's back to that. He's a little more professional than us.
All right. I'm curious, which character in the book is most like you? Is there a character that when you were writing, you were like, okay, this is me in this story?
Oh, yeah. Writer, R-Y-D-E-R, you know,
there it is.
Arrow. A human resources employee. He's the internal propagandist employee newsletter writer for the Phoenician. You know, that it's a job that I actually had, you know,
The White Tigers.
When I was in my late 20s, I was writing stories about the white lion habitat at MGM Grand. And so I just extrapolated from there, like, you know, what if this incredible research was being conducted on these white lions.
Not these lions.
How would the young man respond in this situation? So that was probably my most comedic piece. And I really enjoyed, you know, exploring that side of my personality, the kind of young wannabe, you know, author who's also an incurable hipster and wants to.
Nice. You know,
he's like a gentrifier of downtowns. He's like, you he drinks whiskey neat and thinks he's a badass, you know, that kind of
like, there. Excuse me, let me hide this real quick.
They never mind.
Now you know what I'm dealing with over here. This cat.
He said as he sipped from a paper bag.
Right.
I got my bag
or straight whiskey?
My gluten-free co-host who can't drink our beer sponsors.
But you know what I mean? It's like that kind of obnoxious downtown hipster, you know.
I know. I live it. That's all right.
Well, that's what I mean, that's why it's so, I have such a fun time writing it, because
right.
I can make fun of myself.
And
you can throw yourself into an extreme situation without actually
having
any harm to come to it, kind of live it through your own writing.
Lions the size of school buses? Is that what?
Yes. And
right.
The idea of seeing a lion in the casino was such a big thrill for me in 2003, you know, when I first moved here.
Right.
And, you know, I was scared of those things. And I wouldn't go in the cage. Like, I didn't want to, you know, I was supposed to be writing the story, and I didn't want to, because these were real animals, you know. And even though there was like 10 guys there, 10 trainers, and, you know, the cat had just eaten, I still didn't want to go in there. So.
No, I wouldn't know.
I wanted to make you're not alone. I don't think you're alone. I mean, it's what's the other side? Are you like a thrill seeker?
Yeah, right. Bungee jumper off the stratosphere. No, I never did that.
Who's going in there, right?
I just watched that Netflix documentary called Shark Whisperer about the lady ocean that swims with, and she swims with great whites and holds their fit. I'm like, that girl, no, she has to know eventually this is going to turn bad. It's the same thing as going to that lion cage one day.
That'll be the next documentary.
Right.
Her getting eaten.
And so, you know, Vegas has built in dangers and thrills. It's so fun to write about this
city.
And, you know, Gateways spends its equal time, you know, Florida, Las Vegas. I go to a few other places too, obviously, New Orleans and ancient Canaan. But I love coming back to Vegas, because Vegas
is
buried as a setting that it's almost like 20 different cities in one.
Right, exactly. It's such a cool scene for an apocalyptic story, because you're right. You've got the casinos, and then you got like residential. It's just so much in one city. So,
and I don't think I'll ever get bored or tired of writing stories set in Vegas. To me, this getting this book out, if anything, has inspired me to write more short fiction.
Okay,
because I don't want to make money. I want to.
No, you don't. None at all.
No, I do want to make money, but short fiction is such a hard market. It's like nobody's buying stories. You know, people just want books. People just want novels. You know, screenplays. They don't want a short story. Is like almost. It's like an exercise, a literary exercise today, rather than something that people sit down to enjoy.
I love the collections of short stories, because I struggle as a reader to get through a whole novel. I'll get distracted and put it down. Right. And now it's been 2 weeks. I don't remember where I was. I feel like I got to go back a chapter. A collection of short stories, I can pick it up. I can read one. I can put it down for a month, come back to it. And I'm same, you know, just as good as I was a month ago. So.
Yeah. And the thing too, is when you read short fiction, the satisfaction you get from ripping through a story, like in, you know, a 30, 45 minute, an hour, you know, that feels good. You finished a story.
Right.
Right.
It's like episodic TV, like, you know, through it.
Yeah.
That's what I did with your book, is a story a night.
Right.
Beginning, middle, and end. Just like you said, boom, I accomplished something. Look at me.
Gold star for the day.
And I do think that it's kind of too bad that we haven't embraced the short story in our schools and in our you know, university English courses. I think there needs to be more attention paid to directed at the short story as an art form, because we're always mixing it up with like poetry and not creative nonfiction, especially in these survey classes that I teach here. I just think the story is the best, you know, mode of expression, because it's short. It appeals to our, you know, attention deficit problem.
Yeah. Right.
And it's one of those things where like magazines would benefit from a rejuvenation, resuscitation of the short form story, because man, there was a time when the short story was everything, like back in the late 20th, early 20th century when magazines.
There was everywhere. There, yeah. Like you said, magazines, they were publishing those small magazine booklets or whatever you want to call. I don't remember what they were called, but they were just full of short stories. People just couldn't get enough of them.
And, TV shows like The Twilight Zone, they lent themselves to short fiction, Outer Limits. Even the Star Trek episodes, there are Star Trek episodes that are based on works of short fiction, you know, science fiction. But
sure,
I think we need to do more to kind of encourage people to read short fiction, because we're pushing these YA novels, and they're great, and I know they sell, but I don't know. I'm not so convinced. You know, like they're always really thick, and I don't really see a lot of kids buying them for themselves. I see other people buying them for their kids, for their nephews and nieces, but the kids themselves are reading manga.
Yeah, right.
If anything, and I think we have to find a way to encourage writers to use short fiction to appeal to readers, because it's short, it's punchy, it's fun to package, especially on Amazon and like on the Kindle.
Right.
I think it's kind of a missed opportunity.
Well, my daughter is 10, so I'm going to wait a few years for Gateways to for her. She does like a spooky story now and again, but I think these ones might traumatize her a little bit.
Yeah. What age group do you suggest starting to introduce your book to?
Well, I was 12 and 13 when I read those Stephen King.
Perfect.
You know, so I mean,
2 years.
I'm on board. But if she can't sleep through the night, I'm calling you.
You know, those R.L. Stine books, those Goosebumps books and things like
that. Yes, you're right.
Those are so good, man. And they're coming back.
Yeah.
And it might be, I don't know how, I don't know about their rating. I don't know how savage they are today by today's standards. But those books were terrific. And my kids read them. My kids read a lot of stuff behind me.
My son did too. My son was big into Goosebumps.
Yeah, that's really great stuff. And I think we need to do more of that as well. Like really encourage kids to explore. I don't know. I hate to call it that, but like the darker, the scarier side of fiction. You know.
Yeah. The fun and spooky.
But better than a exquisitely crafted little horror tale. You know. That's why.
Right. Right.
I love that stuff. I love. Even those Vincent Price movies, you know, they clock in at 82 minutes from like those movies from the 60s and 70s, the Roger Corman films. I mean, I just love those tight little stories. I mean, and they're my kids also did. What was that thing? They watched scary stories, audio stories. They would listen to those on the Internet.
Okay. Well, and my son, we would when we traveled, we would listen to Goosebumps on tape.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
A lot of those. So you can't be the only author out there that thinks the same way that you just explained. Have you found anybody else that you enjoy reading?
In terms of horror?
Horror short stories.
Well, I mean, there's great story writers everywhere, but it's one of those things where it's like a song. Like I'll read one great short story by an author and then I'll read the next one. And it's either like a little too similar or a little too... You know, like it's just kind of a disappointment. But for me, the great story writers are people like, you know, Richard Matheson, who's dead now. But he wrote like Last Man on Earth, which was made into Omega Man.
Oh, okay.
Like five remakes. Yep.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. He wrote I Am Legend, which was made into the Vincent Price movie Last Man on Earth, which was made into... Omega Man, and then I Am Legend again with Will Smith. But those
did you hear that they're making an I Am Legend 2?
No, I didn't know that. I didn't know.
That. How does that?
Well, work? Yeah, I don't either. But I read that somewhere, and
the dog died. We don't care.
I have to follow up, right? I didn't know if maybe you had some stuff.
I don't care what happens to Will. That was the saddest part about the dog died. I don't care what happens to Will Smith.
But you know, Richard Matheson wrote the whole dog thing in his novel. That was a heartbreaking moment in that in that novel.
Right.
Rod Serling was a great writer, you know, not just of short fiction, but episodic works and also movies, screenplays. H.P. Lovecraft, Robert E. Howard, you know, or even Jack
Legends.
Even Jack London, Stephen Crane. Hemingway is surprisingly good in the short form. You know, like, he's not just a minimalist. He's using his imagination to conjure vivid scenarios and worlds. And all too often we hit students with Hills Like White Elephants or something. I don't know if they made you read that in high school or
no.
No, it's just it's a terrible, like, bit of domestic realism, but his stuff about it's
terrible.
Well, you know, it's like, it's just, you know, it's not, it doesn't, all the imagination is towards, is driven at the dialogue. You know, it's like the realistic dialogue is what carries that story. But I really like the high concept stuff, that you find in these, you know, Ray Bradbury collections, Stephen King collections.
Sure.
To me, that's like the golden age of the short story, which is at that moment where the magazines are beginning to, you know, die off. TV and radio, I'm sorry, radio, not radio, TV and film are taking off and leaving radio and print behind, you know.
Yeah, Ray, you mentioned Ray Bradbury. I can remember being in high school and having a teacher who knew I read Stephen King suggest Ray Bradbury for me. I remember reading Something Wicked This Way Comes and falling in love with that book. That was brilliant. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
He's got so many.
I don't know why that book is not taught. They're always teaching Fahrenheit, but they need to teach Something Wicked. That is a much superior work, I think.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that.
I have that movie. I have yet. I got to get back to watching it. Which I also did just a little bit ago by a movie. I think it's called Chiller by Rod Sterling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it.
Yep. Okay. I haven't watched it yet, but I saw his name, and that's all I needed to know.
Yeah, I mean, it's again, those Stephen King short stories are unforgettable to me. And I think I've had my sons read them, and they loved them. They just adapted his novella, The Long Walk, into a movie that is coming out, I believe, September?
That's right.
And I don't know if you recall that novella, but it was really, you know, terrifying kind of adolescent Hunger Game style scenario. You know, the kids are forced to march, and whoever marches without getting without stopping, you know, wins $1 million. But if you stop, you're automatically executed by some kind of executioner.
Jesus, that's dark.
I saw the previews to that. I didn't know about the short story, but I did see a preview for the movie, and I was like intrigued right away.
Yeah, I read that way too young. I think I was 10 when I read that.
And so when you read it, did you think, "Oh, I could win this," or
not? Oh, no. I mean, there's no way I could win, but that made it scarier. That made it scarier.
If you think you can win, you're just like, "I'm the hero of this story,"
right? Exactly. I mean, you have to going into that scenario.
Yeah.
I'm going to win. I can win. I can outwalk all these people.
Well, that's what they all think. That's what the kids all think at the start. And that was scary because, you know, you understand as a young person that mentality, you know, I'm going to live forever. Nothing can stop.
Yep.
Then when you're finally confronted with your limitations, you know, it's very unsettling. But I had my sons read it when they were 12 or, you know, 13. And
there's the magic age.
12 or 13.
And they were mad at me for a while because they said, "This is really messed up, Dad. This is really..." But they claim they're both going to come with me to see it in September, the movie adaptation. So
okay.
Nice.
I'm excited for that.
Do you run your stories by your... And I should say run them by them. Do you let them read them early and get any feedback from them? Or do you just say, "Read it when I'm done"?
You know, it's a little sad, but now that I'm having some success with publishing, like, for instance, this collection, the Westerns, they've totally left behind the desire to read. You know, the AR era. Mm. What does AR stand for? The advanced readers, or I don't know what the where you read for points as a kid.
Oh, okay.
Middle school and high school, you if you read books and you
You get points, and
they give you a pizza party or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I was gonna say we just get free Pizza Hut here if you're reading enough books or something like that.
That's what it was, Pizza Hut. They were involved in it. Personal That's right. Deep dish pizzas, and,
So now that it's not competitive, I should say their competitive reading phase is over. They're not really, you know, they'll read it when they get to it. They're gamers now, so it's really difficult to get them to read anything that I write. You know, but I will say that they. That our discussions about literature, because they've done so much reading, are often better than, you know, the conversations I have with my students who, you know, my college students. So my kids,
that's a tribute to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm happy about that. As long as they know, the difference between, Rod Serling and Rowdy Roddy Piper, I'm happy.
Well, but we got to bring this up. Now is a perfect time, because do your sons know that you are inducted into the Nevada Writers Hall of Fame this year?
I let them know. Yes. Oh, thank you. Yes. Thank you. Yeah. They know, and they're very proud of me. They say, and they're coming with me to the induction celebration. So
that's awesome. Now let's talk about that, because that's a very proud moment, and it's, you should be, you know, talked about for that. So what does that entail? And that's exciting.
Yeah, well, it's the Hall of Fame is run out of the university libraries at the University of Nevada, Reno, on the Reno campus of University of Nevada. And, you know, it's got such historical luminaries as Mark Twain.
Wow.
he was posthumously inducted, but, you know, it was back in the 90s. But it's awesome to be, you know, in that company. And there's I have a few retired colleagues who are in the Hall of Fame. But as a friend of mine pointed out, I might be the youngest person to have been admitted into the to be inducted. I don't know if that's true, but I was looking at some of the previous inductees, and you know, it might be true. I might be kind of, but I mean, you know, I'm very.
That's cool, though. Yeah. And tell somebody that you have so much more to give
until somebody proves otherwise. It's true,
right?
Let's go with that.
I think that the thing that really kind of makes it so special is that I see it as a collaborative endeavor. A lot of these books that I've edited for, say, the Las Vegas Rights series, which is sponsored by Nevada Humanities, the cultural sponsoring organization here in Nevada. You know, it's like that series is an annual anthology where I gather the best writing by Las Vegas authors and present it to the community. And the books are sold here in the bookstores and also online. And so it's just wonderful to produce this annual book that spotlights writers from Southern Nevada only. And I couldn't be I've done 5 volumes so far. I'm working on the 6th now. And it's just so fun to help launch ostensibly the writing careers of so many writers here in Las Vegas. It's just so much, it's so satisfying to work with them and to see them not, you know, publish the work, but then move on and get book contracts and work for magazines. And some of them go on to work for the organizations here like Vegas PBS or NPR Radio. So it's been great to see their continued success and to have a hand in that, you know, to know that I pushed them along and encouraged them.
Yeah,
very fulfilling.
So that's what I'm really excited about. And I think that had something to do with my nomination and induction. And I'm really proud of that more than anything, you know, more than any books that I write. I like collaborating with people, like, for instance, the cover artist of To Annihilation.
That's very, very cool and creepy. Did you pose for him, or was that someone else?
No, it does look a little bit like me, doesn't it?
A little bit, a little bit.
No, he does all my book covers. He did the 3 covers for the Kid Crimson series.
I love it. Fantastic. Cool.
Which were really fun, wild, and
great artwork. I mean, it is phenomenal.
And Hammer of the Dogs, the post-apocalyptic Las Vegas novel, which I was talking with you about last time. And I just love working with this artist, because I know he can render anything beautifully. and he's got great ideas. And if I give him just like, you know, a specter in the mirror hovering behind a woman, you know, he can look at that and just,
yeah,
and just totally nail it.
It's very nice.
He does it in a kind of retro way.
It's yes.
Vintage, nostalgic. And I love that you can kind of look at that cover and not really know immediately what era it's from. It could be the 70s, 80s.
Yeah,
true. True.
90s. And
well, we obviously love retro, and it does fit retro. So,
yes. And, but there's, you know, horror writing is so fun, and there's so many, I feel good horror movies coming out at the moment. I'm very excited to see, I already mentioned The Long Walk, but also Weapons. That movie looks pretty promising.
I'm not sure about that one.
That's the new movie by the director of Barbarian, which you made.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
I have heard about that.
Yeah.
And I just feel like horror is happening again and in a way that
it is. Yeah.
There's a Witchboard, I think, is also coming out soon.
Okay.
Reboot of Witchboard.
We've watched.
Dabbed a lot into indie horror, yeah, which is.
I noticed that.
Love it.
It's so much nicer to see something where it there's more passion into it. It seems like than back to your comment about cookie cutter stuff, like stories. Well, that's where horror was going, right? So,
well, you have been hitting the indie. You had the actor from Thanksgiving, and then you had the Steamboat.
Screamboat, yeah. Steamboat. Our friends from Screamboat, yeah.
And then you also, did you have a, was there someone from, no, I think someone was talking to me about Winnie the Pooh or something. Somebody did a horror remake of Winnie the Pooh.
There is
There is, definitely.
There's also a Popeye horror movie that, Popeye the Slayer Man.
So the people from Screamboat, they got nominated in a section, in a category where it was Popeye the Slayer Man and.
Yeah, it was best, yeah.
Winnie the. There was a Winnie the Pooh in there.
Yeah.
There was.
Like the public domain stuff, yeah.
Right.
And my one of my best students here just entered his short horror film, Cow, into the festival circuit. So
nice.
Okay.
He submitted to about, I don't know, 20 or so short horror film festivals.
We talk about this all the time, and we want to create a platform where short film goes to live because it's so hard to find. We talk to all these people who create these movies, and then they're like, well, I've had all these shorts, and you're like, well, there's nowhere to watch them. Where can we watch them? So it'd be great to have a place to go to watch all of these.
I have stumbled upon a few, and I don't know why. Maybe it's the algorithm or something, but on Netflix there was a few. I noticed a few 15 to 20 minute shorts.
Oh, really?
I'm blanking on the names of them now, but
I might have to look at that because I search YouTube, you Google it, and there's so many out there
buried.
I think the corporate entities, the algorithm is trying to suppress or mute some of these short horror movies. I don't know why they want to push their own
stuff. Well, that's funny. I was thinking of that too, that they're suppressing them because some of them become actual full length feature movies. Sure.
Yeah.
So that maybe they want to suppress the source.
Sure. Yeah, that could be. That's a like.
Again,
I have
nothing to back it up, but.
No, conspiracy theories are great. I love it.
Yeah. But I love that my student who is, he's working on his PhD here in in the English department at UNLV, but he can't help himself. He's got to write, direct, and produce short horror films.
That's awesome.
And, his film Cow is a. Doing the festival circuit, and his name's Carlos Tkach, and I'm just stoked for him. I would love him to get a deal where someone signs him and says, let's expand the short into a full length feature.
Well, you let him know you got a fabulous podcast. He can go on and promote that thing if he wants to. I mean, I'm just saying. I don't not our podcast. Hint, hint. I'm assuming you know somebody else.
They're out there. Good ones are out there.
I mean, I think he could find success selling it to Prime or, I don't know. Shudder or whatever.
They're looking
right.
Yeah, Shudder. Shudder is so good.
Yeah.
You know, they have so much. There's so much content that they need. So you think there'd be someone out there for them.
And that's what Gateways is, too. It's also my audition tape to a degree. Like, let's do an anthology series. Call it Gateways to Annihilation. I would watch an anthology series called Gateways to Annihilation. But
absolutely, 100%.
I mean, if not, if it doesn't become that, I don't. You contact every heavy metal band and tell them you got a name for their next album, because it's a perfect heavy metal band. Like, sounds like a Judas Priest album to me.
I think that the more we bring heavy metal and horror into the cultural world discussion, the better off the art will be. You know, everything's still a little anesthetized, and metal is still kind of held at arm's length.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you see we had Spider One on?
Yes.
You know, there's some good music right there, and good movies.
And I think that the more that we bring that into, I don't want to say the mainstream, but we just bring more attention to it, it'll result in some awesome collaborations, you know, like I do.
Yeah.
So speaking of music, do you get into the Norwegian black metal or yeah. Or was that before the rabbit hole, or did you just enjoy it yourself?
No, I enjoyed it as a young person. I mean, I was in high school in the early 90s. So that's what we tried to find the most obnoxious, abrasive.
Right.
And, you know, if your band didn't commit wholesale murder and burn down at least a dozen churches, you know, it was like, no, okay, I'm exaggerating. But you know what I mean? It's like,
but yes,
you try to find the most, you know, extreme band that you could back then. And the worse that the tape sounded, the better, you know. If you couldn't discern whether the tape was malfunctioning or not, then, you know, you had a problem, right? You know, you want it to sound like a chainsaw on fire.
Yeah. Wait, you mentioned Hammer of the Dogs before. Is there any chance that we're going to have a part two to this book?
Oh, yeah, part two and a part three. I'm working now on part two, Havoc of the Dogs.
Nice.
Okay.
And I think I hinted to this at you a couple years ago. I'm sending Lash to Mars for the third installment, Holocaust of the Dogs. So we have a consistent, you know, H of the
absolutely. Absolutely.
That's what every trilogy requires, right? You got to have
eventually you're going to space, man. You got to do it somewhere.
And I don't care what anybody says, literary agents or not. If you need to write a fourth Kid Crimson, I'll pay just for me. Yeah. I'll pay for it because I need more to the story. So let's keep that thing going somehow.
Yeah. Again, you know, it's like one of those things where I had high hopes for the Western, you know, Horizon was just about to come out. You know, and they're still making Westerns. Like I saw American Primeval on the TV.
Yeah. Very good, by the way. Very good. Yeah.
Very good. And I mean, I still think there's something there, but I don't know. It's just not really, it's not quite, the Western isn't quite re-galvanized enough to make
it's public. Not, but you know what? I wanted to mention this all the whole time is, you know, appreciate that you stick with it and you're putting them out there because we need that Western out there. We need it to keep going. So,
yeah.
Well, these are perfect bite-sized Westerns. Exactly. So if you don't want to commit yourself to a long form novel, these things are short part. They read quickly. Yeah,
there you go.
You can't beat them. Dime store novellas. Is that what they're?
Yeah, yeah. That's what.
So we're gonna be quiet for a minute because the camera does switch, or you can do that.
What?
I want them to show the books.
Oh, we've been on. Yeah, I can do that now.
Oh, that's right.
It's been a long time. Yeah. He doesn't do any of the editing. He doesn't know.
Zero.
The thing about the Western, too, is I'm writing about the Civil War era, so that is a really messed up time.
Yeah.
Right.
Sure.
So it adds a whole other layer of danger and menace and intrigue, and I don't see it any other way. I don't want to really write about Kid Crimson outside of that era, but I find that I might have to. Like, the fourth book, I might have to jump ahead, like, 20 years.
Yeah.
So now there was this movie Sinner, which I did not watch, but that was kind of old school horror. So would you ever do a Western horror?
Ooh.
Oh yeah. I mean, they try to call it weird Western or whatever as a subgenre of the
Western. Okay.
And I love the weird Western, but it turns off so many traditional Western readers, which is where the primary.
Gotcha.
And the I don't know how else to put this, but the traditional Western readers look down and do not appreciate the weird Western. And the weird Western readers, I find, they're more open to horror. They're more open to sci-fi. They're more open to just a lot of things. But traditional Western readers, God bless them. They're a little conservative. You know, they want their Western.
They want John Wayne Westerns.
You know,
they want cookie cutter kind of.
Yeah. And that's fine. Like I love Louis L'Amour. I mean, Louis L'Amour is an incredible author. Mm-hmm. Probably one of the best up there easily with, you know, Edgar Rice Burroughs and everybody. But the whole idea of putting these Westerns out there is, you know, I didn't intend this, but I wanted to create a kind of cooler version of that TV show Wild Wild West.
Okay.
And that's hard to do because that was a pretty kick-ass show.
The show was great, but then the movie kind of pushed everything.
Oh, the movie was horrible.
Yeah, the movie.
Why do they always do it? They always ruin them.
Did untold damage to the that kind of Western, you know, the
you're right,
espionage Western or whatever. And so techno Western, whatever you want to call it. I really wanted to kind of take a stab at that. And I bit off a little more than I could chew in terms of trying to secure readership. You know, if you want a big readership, you should probably just do something like a contemporary Western, a neo-Western like Yellowstone.
Sure.
Like that. So I kind of missed not the mark, but if I wanted a larger readership, I should have aimed a little differently.
You like, right? It seems to me like you write for what you like.
Yeah.
And that's what you like.
I was going to say, selfishly, I'm glad you went the route you did, because I wouldn't have enjoyed it as much as if it was just good old standard Western. So
yeah, I'm kind of weird. I know you guys are, you like weird stuff. So you want to read stuff that's just a little off kilter, maybe a little different.
Right. Right.
Beaten path a little bit, has an edge to it, underground style. And that's what I was trying to do. And I succeeded. I think it's just, you know, you want, like any author, I want to make a little bit of money on the back end, you know, some royalties would be nice. And those,
yeah, of course.
The book business is so screwed up. We don't need to go into it, but you know, it's like, it just seems like you get a little bit of success and then, oh yeah, you made a lot of money, but then all these books were returned. So then that takes a cut out of your, profits. Oh. And so it's, very, very challenging. I almost think, you know, sponsors might be the way to go for a lot of authors.
There you go.
On their Kindle only books and short stories, you know. Fill it with ads, you know.
Yeah, right? I mean, so the world we're in.
Yeah.
So in Kindle, do you is the audiobook out for this yet?
No. There was an audiobook for Hammer only, and I was planning on doing the one for the Westerns, but they came out with so quickly one after the other, which was part of the sales.
The appeal. Yeah.
That it became like prohibitively expensive all of a sudden. Like we'd have to invest so much money on the front end that we were just, you know, you have to do production, everything else. And so to add audio onto that was going to be a challenge. With Gateways, I've got this great idea of having my students narrate it and produce it.
Oh, how fun.
That would be great.
Make it part of like a podcasting class in the spring and just have them.
So with that being said, cool. Have you already in your head kind of going, ooh, that student I think would be good for this story. Yeah, you already got it. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, the students, and also I'm not just in touch with English majors. You know, like I know the theaters kids, with film majors, you know, I know a lot of different, I'm familiar with a range of students here and they're so talented.
You got a plethora of kids out there.
They're so talented and,
all right.
And they want to do stuff. They're just waiting for a chance, you know,
right.
When you give them a chance to do something. It's not easy. I know that being young and you don't really know what direction to go into, you're kind of waiting for something to happen. You're kind of hoping someone will discover you, but no one's going to discover you. You have to jump in there, start writing, start producing, start directing, start crowdfunding, crowdsourcing,
whatever. Advocate for yourself.
Yes, you have to. And
yep.
A lot of your guests on this show are go-getters, you know, self-motivated.
Yep. That's so true.
I find that to be a common theme throughout your guests. Like they want to make things happen. And for a lot of them, they've made it happen. And for the others, they're very close. Like things are going to turn around, especially those comedians that are just on the brink.
Yeah. You can see so many of them.
And if we can do any part to help push them a little bit, that's all we, absolutely. You know, that's all we care about.
Yeah.
So one before it, it's been great talk. I want to go back to comic books real quick. Is there a Holy Grail comic book that you've been seeking to get? Hence back to your story about that you need to have in your collection.
You mean like a single issue?
Single issue. Yep.
I've scratched every itch. Okay. But I will say this. I will say this. My wife often says to me, how can you buy more comics? You have them all. Cause she sees the boxes.
Yes.
Long boxes stacked up in my closet and in my office. And I'm like, no, you don't understand this is a near mint. This is a mint version of the comic that I have.
That's ongoing.
Like I have a beat up version, reader only, like a chewed up copy, but I need the copy that is pristine, she doesn't understand that. She thinks it's like I'm going over it all again, but I'm like, no, the grading of the comic, the quality, the pristine state of the comic is now important, So
you just got to go back with how many purses do you need or how many pairs of shoes do you need? It's the same thing, right? Like,
I mean, like Gamma World First Edition, the role-playing game, the post-apocalyptic role-playing game, I thought it would be costly to buy it, years later. I bought it, 5 years ago for a couple $100 and, that was what I wanted. The internet though makes everything too convenient, and that's why in comic book hell there's no internet. It's like in the 90s or mid 90s, and so he's everything has to be done in person. He has to go to all the
store. You actually got to work for
physically,
it
physically. Yes.
And so, but I think it's so much easier now to find the grails, so-called grails, but because of the internet, and that takes a lot of the fun out of it. But that said, I'll stumble onto something that I didn't know I needed. It's there. And I'm like, I'm buying.
I do that every weekend.
If you two lived in the same city, it would be bad. You guys would go on weird shopping sprees.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a $20, like Christian comic book, the Gospel Blimp. It's in pristine condition, and my wife said, why are you buying Christian comic books from the 70s? I don't know. I read it as a kid. I need it. I see it's right here. I got to buy it. It's a mystery to her, but to me, it makes complete sense.
There it is. It makes complete sense.
And I will write
sense to you.
I will write the story about the Christian comic book illustrator one day.
Okay.
Not today, but one day I will write it, and
someday
it'll be amazing, and it'll make people laugh and smile and think differently about the lowly art form of the Christian comic.
Not many people know they're out there.
I'm not sure. I was going to say, I'm not sure I knew there was such a thing.
They're out there.
Yeah.
They used to be out there. I don't think they make them anymore.
And they don't, but actually they do. I think it's called Kingstone Comics, and I'm buying all those online, but we don't need to talk about that. I will say that Gateways to Annihilation is published at the moment that Ozzy expires. That to me was very, a poignant moment for me because, I grew up really loving, Ozzy's music, with Sabbath and also solo.
Yeah.
Right.
And absolutely.
His music was sort of a soundtrack to me, to my reading of King, Stephen King and early science or, 70s, 80s, science fiction and horror. So that was sort of the soundtrack that blasted while we played Dragons, while we did all these nostalgic things, while I read comics, while I did anything.
Wait, did the cool kids just call it Dragons? It wasn't Dungeons and Dragons, just Dragons?
That's the cool kids.
I'm sure you caught Ozzy's last performance.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, it was wonderful. Yeah.
It's brought
to you. Yeah.
And I got to see Lemmy live in concert here in Vegas, like 2 months before he died.
Wow.
Wow.
That would have been amazing.
One of his last shows. And, but no, I mean, that's, in some ways his death is like a marker, you know, for
it will be
the pleasures of my youth. He was kind of, at the center of all of that. And,
yeah, no, I hear you. We must be about the same age. I graduated high school in 91. And that's what I said is like, Ozzy has been in my life,
right?
Every minute that I can remember in my life, he's been part of it. So it's weird when you start to lose those guys that have been around your whole life.
Yeah, I dedicated the book Gateways to Annihilation to Steve Ditko, who was a co-creator of Spider-Man and Doc Strange and, you know, did a lot of spooky horror comics in the 70s. But, you know, if it was coming out this week, I would have
been. Had I known, right?
Yeah.
To Ozzy because, you know, and when I was a kid growing up in Tampa in the late 80s, you know, all of us listened to Ozzy. Like nobody, you know, we listened to every record, Sabbath, solo Ozzy disc. That's what we listened to. And there's nothing, I don't think it hasn't been like that since, you know.
Well, they were big pioneers in the path to a lot of great music.
Yes.
That this is, you know, people can bring it out and they can make money, because if they didn't make money, they wouldn't want to do bands like that. So it touched a nerve with people, and it really, really propelled.
And all the musicians whose careers he launched, you know, the guitarist.
Right,
and,
right.
But just an incredible force, creative force. And I'm not even sure he was, I don't think he even wrote any of his lyrics or anything, but he was just knew what to do with words. And if you gave him something to sing, he'd make it sound cool. It's just a natural, instinctual talent, like just wild.
Just a presence. He was so cool on stage too.
Well, that's what I think you hit on the head. I would, and, you know, really thought about it, but yeah, he just made the words sound cool. He really did.
And no one, you can't confuse him with someone else, you know. So. No.
Nope.
Even people who try to imitate him, it doesn't work because he's just
no. Those are the best ones when they're so distinct.
Yeah, and so that's a bit. I'm just a little bit sad that I couldn't dedicate it to him. But there's more books, so I can write dedicated.
There you go.
But you definitely do touch on heavy metal in the book and through your stories. You know, you mentioned Wasp in one of them. You know, so you do. You do touch on it, which is awesome. So,
an HR nightmare is someone introducing Wasps. F like a beast.
Keeping it going. I love it. Love it. It's the flavor of the horror. They do go hand in hand.
I do.
They do.
Wasp was a horror movie, weren't they?
Well, they feel like it. I mean, every song was a miniature horror film. And they were in a horror movie. But I think that more than anything, Wasp and Ozzy, they did more to inspire horror than I would say any number of writers. You know, they so many of speculative fiction writers my age, you know, we have that in common. We're inspired by music, by film, by comic books. And that world is almost gone. It's the doors.
Don't say that. Don't say that. We'll keep it alive somehow.
We got to keep it alive.
Right?
Yeah. We got to.
I still enjoy. I don't even collect them, but I still enjoy walking into a comic book store because it's just so nostalgic and just to feel it, you know? So, yeah.
We've got a couple. We've got some here. We do have a few around town and in close areas that have comic books. My daughter collects them. All my children do. I used to. I don't anymore. I wish I would have them back, the ones that I had.
Right? Oh, yeah. I mean, they'd be, it's not just what they'd be worth, but also, you know, the memories, the power as totems, as objects. You know, you want to, you hold them and they give off energy. I know that sounds kind of metaphysical or that sounds new agey.
No.
They have a power. No, they have an aura about them, you know.
When
they're good.
Or when they're really bad.
Really naughty.
Dear, I used to collect all the Freak Brothers.
Yeah.
Fabulous. Do you remember those guys?
Yeah. And they're, I found I bought a batch of them the other day. I might send them to you. I'll just mail them to you. because I've got multiple copies of them. I don't know why. But when you see them, you kind of have to buy them. They're so weird looking. You know,
just... Yes.
God, you two are.
I would buy them. My mom would be so mad at me when I'd come home from the comic book store with Freak Brothers. She was like, you can't buy these drug infested thing. And I'm like, I don't know how old I was. I was in grade school, but I just thought they were funny.
Yeah.
Funny looking, you know, just the whole concept.
They were not titillating that. I mean, they were just kind of weird and
just weird,
just gross and fun, you know,
and gross.
What they're supposed to be.
Yes. I love it. Freak Brothers. I don't know why that popped in my head, but when you said something, it popped in my head.
Well, it's also like, you know, like Garbage Pail Kids, like those were ugly cards, but
sure.
I was obsessed with them. I had to have as many ugly, murderous doll cards as I could find. I mean, they weren't all murderous. Some of them were or whatever. They were really grotesque and weird, and you know, that would never happen ever today. Everything is very antiseptic, anesthetized.
Yeah.
But I want to bring some of that excitement and energy back, the good stuff, not the, you know, not everything was great back then, but a lot was great.
And you'll keep it dark.
And you're definitely off to a good start with Gateways. So,
yeah, I'm writing some more horror novels this fall. So hopefully those will start rolling out and in time for Halloween.
Excellent.
So, you know, Vegas has got a huge indie movie scene.
Right.
And we just talked about it, right? We've had a lot of guests on that were go-getters.
Yeah.
Have you thought about filming any of your stories yourself?
I have thought about it, but, you know, just trying to write them is effort enough. Like, I'm going to have to develop a serious drug habit to get at the film, you know, like I've published 5 novels in 2 years. So I'm trying to, like, you know, I don't want to burn myself out.
And yeah, I think
directing, producing a film would be really tough. And then you're also kind of at the mercy of other people's deadlines, and that gets crazy.
It would be tough. 100%. You're right. But video or something.
You're at other people's. Like, if somebody decides they're going to pay for this thing, now you got to take their input and maybe change your ideas. Yeah. And, you know, like, sometimes it's fine just on paper. Let your imagination be the film.
Yeah. Well, the thing, too, is, you know, if they're not willing to give you money up front and they want you to do all this work, you know, before you get paid, that's not something I'm willing to, you know, I can't. But yeah, a lot of people go for it. A lot of people do it. Like, you know.
Sure.
Writers will say, hey, this screen agent wants me to redo this. And I ask, oh, are they paying you? He goes, no, it's on spec. But I'm like, oh, okay.
Oh, wow.
Got to hold out, man. Hold out for what you believe in. That's what I say.
If I'm going to rewrite something to appease another person, I'm going to need some more money.
You know? Right. Yeah.
You got to know, as artists, you have to know your worth. And it's going to be tougher in the coming AI era.
Yeah, how much does that? That's a good point. How much does that scare you? Because I've started to use ChatGPT a lot for the podcast, for writing descriptions for episodes, for putting together, you know, questions for interviews and stuff. Does that worry authors? How easy it is for AI to just spit something out?
I mean, it doesn't worry me, but and I think that's why I'm so thrilled that this book comes out, you know, right before what I know will be the AI apocalypse.
Yeah.
You know, like, I got all my cool stuff and now, you know, and now,
right.
I know that I can do it and I don't have to rely on some computer to give me story ideas or
right.
character list. But yeah, I can easily see a publisher taking not my next novel, but a novel like a few years from now.
Sure.
Running it through AI and saying, make this better. And then the AI takes my story or my novel and improves it.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
While stealing all my ideas and style and tone and word choice and all, you know, syntax.
To what they think is better.
Yeah, that's frightening to me.
Yeah.
True.
Where do the copyright laws come in then at that point if they take the idea and I mean, yeah, it's a scary thought.
That scares me more than, say, a student using AI to write a paper. Like, oh. I actually don't even, like, I'm not the AI police. I'm not going to, you know, if you want to sabotage your brain by using AI to write your papers, you know, that's on you. But this idea that somebody could do that, like copy and paste my book, you know, put it into the AI and say, make Jared Keene's short story better, improve his short story.
Change it just enough. And I think you could do that, is like change it just enough.
Yeah, or change enough so that
I'm not in the copyright laws.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And that to me is frightening.
Yeah. It's very frightening.
For sure. I don't know what we're going to do about it. I don't know if anything can be done, but.
Well, you could try and sue them, and then it's just a waste of your time and money. And
right. I think that's what they want. They want to break you even more. So
right.
They've stolen your work. Now they want to force you to be, you know, literally bankrupt trying to fight the inevitable.
Right. Yeah.
At some point, they're going to just go out there and say, okay, everybody, there's enough shit out in the world out there in AI.
Yeah.
Give me what the most popular story base is, and then write a story off of that. And there's no creativity off of it anymore.
Yeah. But I mean, if an author wants to use ChatGPT for the marketing materials, I say, yeah. But
sure.
Do you have to feed like the whole novel in there? Like, I know you
shouldn't have to.
Do you have to feed like the whole podcast in to get the description of what's discussed? Like, I don't know. You know, and then I know that a podcast is different than intellectual right. labor of, you know, writing a book or whatever. But you know, these are questions that have to be at least considered. But yeah. I'm not. I don't care if anyone uses AI to make a book cover or. I mean, I don't like it, but. Cover or do marketing like flyers, posters. I understand. Yep. You know, it's hard to write a book and then devise this intricate marketing plan. Sometimes you need a little help.
Yeah.
But you know, I think the art of the stories, of the novels, of the creative nonfiction and the poems, those should be as human and as real and as full of flaws as possible.
Well, I'm not sure AI could come up with the stories that you've written in Gateway. So I think you're safe. Is there any rules when you're writing these stories? Like, do you ever go, this is too far away from reality? No rules.
No, I mean, you lived through the last 5 years. I mean, it was crazy.
That's true.
There are no rules, man.
What even happened? I don't even know. I mean, I don't want to get into it with you, but you know, it was like, I don't even know what happened. I'm so confused. I feel right. like I'm leaving a nightmare dream. You know, I don't even know how I made it. I know how I made it. I wrote these books, but, you know, I think that's the nothing. I was so shocked by the last 5 years that, I think I'm ready for anything. I think my stories can and do compete with what has transpired.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I wrote Conjure Me before the plague that ravaged us 5 years
ago. Good point.
And you know, everything in my story is true. I mean, nothing, there's as wild as that story is, it feels so true now. It feels true yeah. because of what we lived through. And I wrote that story like 15 years ago or whatever. And that's what I came away with finishing this collection, is just, there's nothing I can think of that reality doesn't ultimately outdo.
Yeah, for sure.
Always does. I always say you couldn't write this. Sometimes, you know, you hear a story and you're like, you couldn't write this. Yeah.
No.
But we want you to just keep writing, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Love your brain. I love the way you think and your stories. Mention it again. 14 different stories is amazing. You know, thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Oh man, I loved chatting with you guys. This is my favorite podcast, mainly, like I said, because I'm always tuning in here and finding something different that I'm not anticipating, and I'm grateful for that. It's you have an unexpected roster.
Just yes. when you think you know what's going on.
Yes, we do.
And I'm grateful for that. There's so much about life that isn't unpredictable. That's kind of stayed and kind of beige. So I appreciate you bringing what you bring. The energy is infectious. Makes me want to. hang out even more. So yeah, it is a good thing we don't live in Wisconsin together, because we'd be a lot of problems.
you two would be often.
I do need to take a trip out to Vegas. That's for
sure.
We do.
There's got to be a podcast. Well, given your last experience at the podcaster convention, but you should, if there is a podcast convention here, you should.
Well, we've been invited to the AVN Awards. That's what we need to come to Vegas for.
Yeah.
That's better than a podcast convention, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, but that even that is kind of like shrinking every year. It feels like.
I'm sure.
Does it? Yeah.
Yeah.
As the internet and, you know, whatever else, AI, I'm sure. You know,
it's taking all the good stuff away.
But all the good things in life.
Yeah, but if you get out here, please look me up, and we'll I'll show you the. I wrote a book years ago called "The Underground Guide to Las Vegas."
Yeah,
that's right.
And a lot of those spots are still open and open for business. So I can show you some.
You can show us the real places to go.
Yeah, well, I live downtown. I'll show you some seedy joints. We'll have fun. So.
Nice. That'd be a blast. Yeah.
Well, it would just be great to just meet you and hang out. But yeah, I appreciate that. I appreciate all the kind words you just said about our podcast. I appreciate that.
Oh,
we both do.
It's
Well, I'm gonna clip it, and it's gonna be out tomorrow. So
yeah,
you're gonna have to wait. You're gonna have to wait for the episode. But that part where you talk nice about us, I'll get that out tomorrow. Yeah, make
sure. On loop.
All right. Oh, well, thank you so much. And I think it goes without saying, but anytime you want to come on to promote something, we love talking to you. So you just say the word, and we'll do this again. It's a lot of fun.
Sorry it took so long, but tell everybody where they can find you and where they can find your awesome book.
Yes, my book is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold. I will say that I think it's free on it's free as an ebook through the Kindle.
Oh, wow. Kindle. Okay. Oh, wow.
And so you should take advantage of that if you have it. And then the website is jarrettkeen.net. And I'm also on Facebook, author Jarrett Keen, as well as Instagram, author Jarrett Keen. If there's anybody left on X, I'm at Keen Jarrett.
We tried it for a while. Every time we start this show now, I introduce, he says it, and I just call it a shithole. So, because that's basically what I think it has turned into. But
yeah, I found a nice little niche of people sharing comic book covers, you know, but it never goes
beyond like
500 people. So
well, that's, yeah, there you go. That's good.
So that's it.
Yeah, found something good there.
Yeah,
you can find some good groups here, because there's people that want to share their love. I'm part of, you know, DVD groups that we, you know, this is my haul for the weekend, and we post what we found over the weekend at thrift shops and stuff.
Yeah.
I've known you for 25 years and that fact just came out.
Wow.
Something else to make fun of you for. Thanks.
That's why I didn't tell you.
We really appreciate it. We can't say it enough. We love talking to you. So,
well, thanks, it's a blast. Kevin. Thanks, Dean. I appreciate it. Well, let's do it again. I'm telling you, come to Vegas.
We will do that.
There you go.
All right. Have a good night.
Thank you so much. Night-night.
Thank you for listening. The tavern is closed for now, but we'd love to have you back for more fun next time. Seriously, though, get your asses out of here.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply, in-app only.